Everyone, good afternoon. Kelly Lualier was supposed to be delivering this, but unfortunately she's not able to join us today for that. But I'm Juliana Schulman. I'm the National Organizer for Corporate Accountability International and our Value the Meal campaign, and I'm really excited to be here today, and I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to take this in a bit of a different direction and talk specifically about some of the barriers to introducing really good evidence-based policy that addresses chronic disease. In particular, I'm kind of an unusual ally in this panel, but in particular we're talking about policies that address the food environment by addressing marketing of fast food and unhealthy foods to kids. And this is important because, as a lot of you know, food marketers and big food target African American communities, Latino communities, low-income communities in particular. And in some ways, the rates of chronic diet-related disease are affected by this. But today, and in the midst of a diet-related disease epidemic among kids, recent studies suggest that curbing fast food marketing to kids could have a profound effect on a generation. And yet, according to the Yale Rudd Center, the food industry is actually expanding the ways that they're marketing to children and increasing certain marketing tactics used to reach kids. So innovative policies that really address the food industry have a lot of potential to really transform the food environment and shape this epidemic of diet-related disease. And yet, at various levels of the policy food chain, if you will, these corporations are interfering in communities where they're looking to use local policy as a tool to help with prevention. So I'm going to talk a little generally about some of these tactics and then specifically hone in on the San Francisco Healthy Meals Ordinance, which was a policy passed last year, and Corporate Accountability International was playing a key role in making sure that passed. But before we begin talking about fast food, I want to give you a little bit of a background and history on the organization I'm presenting with today. So Corporate Accountability International is a nonprofit membership group, and we work to protect people and the environment from dangerous and irresponsible corporate actions around the world. So we got our start in the 1970s with the Nestle boycott and infant formula that many of you probably remember. And since then, we've had a number of different campaigns challenging different industries. Our long-running campaign challenging big tobacco began in the 80s and 90s and actually sent Joe Camel packing and gave the Marlboro Man the boots. And more recently, we played a key role in passing the Global Tobacco Treaty, which is the first global public health treaty, which was through the WHO. But in each of these campaigns, it was really health professionals that played a key role and helped us move forth a lot of these public health protections. And so we know that your voices are going to be equally as important in our work on food. So today our campaigns focus on three main areas, challenging corporate control of water, and protecting water as a basic human right, challenging big tobacco, and then challenging corporate abuse of our food system. And it was, as I said, it was really our work with the WHO on tobacco that led us to our food campaign, because we realized that the same lobbyists that work for big tobacco are now working for big food today. So one of our key demands for Value the Meal is to call on McDonald's and the fast food industry to stop interfering in public health policy. So as you know, this is old news to a lot of you, but we are facing an epidemic of diet-related disease in this country, particularly among children. The CDC says that one out of three kids born in the U.S. in the year 2000 are expected to get type 2 diabetes in their lifetime. And this, along with a host of other chronic conditions that are starting earlier and becoming more common, leads a number of experts to believe that this will be the first generation in history to live shorter lives than their parents. So, moreover, there's a growing body of evidence linking junk food to diet-related disease. And one of particular interest to me is a research that shows that so-called food deserts, while a big issue, are not the whole piece of the problem in terms of food environments. Food swamps, which are thick with fast food joints and convenience stores, are also a key part of transforming our food environment and making sure it really helps communities stay healthy. And finally, there's a growing body of evidence from the Institutes of Medicine to the National Bureau of Economic Research that shows that that stopping marketing of junk food to kids could spare the health of a generation. So given this broad base of evidence, recently leading groups are strongly recommending that we combat this health epidemic by addressing our food environment and specifically calling on food industries to take action. This is a community-wide problem, and it takes a full community-wide response that goes way beyond personal choice. So from the World Health Organization to the American Academy of Pediatrics to the White House, leading groups and policymakers have really recommended that we limit and even stop all fast food marketing to kids. And with this growing body of evidence and all this grassroots momentum, then, why haven't we taken action? Well, I'm sure you know the answer to this question based on my title. You know, we know that money is one of the key ways that corporations, including the fast food industry, have been influencing policy. So during the 2010 election, the Food and Beverage Corporations contributed more than $14 million to congressional candidates. But when we look at that number, that's not the whole picture. This number doesn't even include big ag and food processing industries, which are really the main suppliers to fast food, which spent another $56 million. In that election. Throughout 2010, the food and beverage industry spent more than $41 million on lobbying, employing 313 lobbyists in Congress, in D.C. rather, one lobbyist for every 1.7 members of Congress. And again, fast food's main suppliers added to this mix another $189 million of lobbying in 2010 alone. So these hiring numbers make the food and beverage industry one of the most well-funded and powerful lobbies at the Capitol. And for comparison, in 2010, the tobacco industry spent $17 million, and the oil and gas industry spent $146 million. So it's really a huge piece of this problem. And in addition to lobbying policymakers, there are a lot of ways in which the food industry actually spends billions lobbying the public to really stick with the status quo and not speak up about these issues. So these are just some of the examples of how McDonald's, who's really the industry leader on this playbook of marketing, courts public opinion. So each year, McDonald's sponsors, you know, sports stars, the Olympics. So not only gain favor with the billions who are watching these celebrities and looking up to them, but also to really build brand association with physical activity, and which really helps serve to reflect blame from their unhealthy products. Similarly, McDonald's uses its Ronald McDonald House charities, which a lot of us know and love, to do the same thing and to co-opt a number of health institutions and really try to build a brand healthfulness. So there's no question that these charities do really great work. But there are really serious questions to be raised when a charity that helps sick kids is associated with a brand that makes millions of kids sick. And by way of comparison, McDonald's spends $10 million contributing to charity each year. They spend $400 million marketing directly to kids. And that's just to kids. That doesn't include their marketing budget to reach you and me. And finally, McDonald's also courts communities through partnerships with various public institutions, from financially strapped public schools to public libraries, which to me are, you know, non-commercial spaces. They're public places, but they use everything from Ronald's in assemblies, these free assemblies they offer, to, as you see there, a report card that has Ronald's in the corner, because if you get A's and B's, you can bring it to your local McDonald's and get free chicken McNuggets. So it's free branding, but a really great opportunity to help move that and change their image. Also, to ensure the status quo, McDonald's and its industry allies really ensure that these lobbying efforts are translated into national nutrition and health guidelines and policies. So on the right is the map for healthy eating released by the USDA this past year. And on the left is the version that Dr. Walter Willett and his colleagues at Harvard introduced in response. But amidst the differences you see here is a really clear indication of the power of the food industry's lobbying. So the USDA, which developed the food plates, largely represents the interests of dairy, potato, and cattle farmers, among others. So the resulting icon definitely reflects this through its addition of dairy as a necessary piece of a healthy diet, as well as its lack of detailed nutritional information. There's no sentences there telling you how many servings you should have or how, you know, that you should avoid having too much of anything. It's very, very vague, and for a good reason. In the U.S., McDonald's is actually the largest purchaser of a number of the products that influence these guidelines. So McDonald's is the largest purchaser of beef, potatoes, tomatoes, apples, lettuce. I could go on for a while. So in terms of fast food's direct role in these types of policies, there's really no denying that McDonald's and its providers have a really great relationship with each other and do each other's bidding in a number of ways. And a really recent example is also on the national level. In December of 2010, Congress formed an interagency working group on food marketed to children. And the task force was directed to do two things. First, to conduct a study and to develop recommendations for standards for foods that are marketed to children 17 or younger, or when the food represents a very significant portion of a child's diet. And second, the group was tasked to determine which media this would apply to. So the proposed voluntary standards, voluntary I might add, were released in 2009. And since that time, the food industry has sponsored the Sensible Food Policy Coalition, which spent nearly $60 million lobbying against these guidelines and the science-based recommendations that were part of them. So the industry started calling members of Congress, pushing them to write letters to the agencies, telling them that they needed substantial modifications to these recommendations. And just a few weeks ago, in front of members of the House, the revised, now very industry-influenced recommendations were brought forth. And not surprisingly, among the changes was the removal of a provision that would have set nutritional standards for the use of characters like Ronald McDonald and Toucan Sam. It also had a big change in the scope of the guidelines, so this no longer reaches or includes adolescents or anyone over the age of 12. So in all, the food industry managed to totally water down these guidelines, and again, they're still voluntary. So the likelihood of many of these corporations taking them up is slim to none. But again, in response to municipalities who introduced policies to protect children's health, McDonald's and the restaurant industry also recognized that this growing community concern is a threat to its operations. So in order to protect their profits, they started using preemption tactics as well, where McDonald's actually quietly put forth bills to prevent local governments from passing legislation that addresses marketing. So earlier this year, just after the San Francisco policy, which I'll get into, was introduced, the restaurant industry moved these bills through the State House in Arizona and Florida, thereby preventing Miami, Phoenix, and other major cities from really choosing to take collective community action on a number of these issues. So we just have a few minutes left, but I want to kind of illustrate some specific ways in which McDonald's interfered in San Francisco last year. And so the San Francisco Healthy Meals Ordinance was introduced last fall. The ordinance was introduced by Supervisor Marr, and it sets basic nutritional standards for kids' meals that are served with toy giveaways. So kids' meals can either have the toy, and McDonald's totally changes their menu of kids' meals so they're healthier, or they just take out all the toys of their existing kids' meals and can't use those to market the meals. But throughout the process, the fast food industry, and in particular McDonald's, was on the ground trying to weaken and block this really common sense policy. And I'll talk a little bit about how. So the first strategy McDonald's used was to frame itself as a stakeholder in the process. And so McDonald's sent high-ranking executives to the supervisor's office, Supervisor Marr, where they attempted to engage in a dialogue and propose changes in the ordinance around weakening the nutritional standards. When Supervisor Marr's office refused to water down the nutritional standards, McDonald's decided they needed to shift their tactics to scare tactics. Again, they sent high-ranking officials to Supervisor Marr's office, along with a high-powered legal team from the San Francisco community, to threaten a lawsuit on First Amendment grounds. And yet, these scare tactics are, you know, effective not only in making San Francisco supervisors nervous about the ordinance, but also in deterring other cities from taking action in the future for fear of the cost and the time associated with such lawsuits. When the supervisor was not deterred by the lawsuit, a third strategy emerged, And this strategy involved a massive lobbying and PR campaign to keep the ordinance from passing. So now it existed, they wanted to make sure it didn't pass. And among the tactics used, McDonald hired a conservative law firm, lobbying firm known as BMWL. And they began by convincing Mayor Newsom to veto the ordinance. Mayor Newsom was going to be up for California State House or California State Office election soon, so they wanted to frame it as wildly unpopular, politically dangerous. And so even though he'd taken measures to protect children's health in the past, they were able to successfully have Mayor Newsom say that he would veto the ordinance when it came to his desk. Once the mayor was set to veto, McDonald's moved on to lobbying the swing vote, who would essentially determine a veto-proof vote for this bill. And McDonald's and the PR firm held numerous visits with the swing vote supervisor, Duffy, to secure his vote against the ordinance. The firm even put out a massive robocall to his district, so he was getting calls. And additionally, McDonald's and BMWL harnessed their connections to really ensure negative media attention. So again, trying to make this look like it was a wildly unpopular thing in the community. When on the ground, we were seeing that it was seen as very common sense and, you know, very widely supported. So through this and partnerships with reporters and national bloggers, and the full-page ad in the Chronicle that cost $100,000, McDonald's managed to prop up its image and really make it look like a politically dangerous situation. I unfortunately have to wrap up, so I'm going to run through a few more very quickly. But the other kind of interesting things is McDonald's actually asked for an exemption, claiming that they were working with the White House on nutrition. And when we called the Let's Move campaign to confirm this, they said they supported the San Francisco ordinance and had no idea what they could be referring to. They sought, again, voluntary ordinance, hoping that, you know, they wouldn't have to comply with any of this. They continued their media relationships, again, working to really, even after the ordinance was passed, working to make sure that, you know, this new news about this new bill was framed in a way that would prevent other communities from moving forward with similar measures. And then preemption. So, you know, when other communities started to take this up, from Superior, Wisconsin to Nebraska, McDonald's teamed up with a number of industry allies to make sure that everything was quietly put away before it was even brought forward publicly. And again, moving forward in Arizona and Florida to make sure that bills are passed at the state level so communities and municipalities can no longer move things forward. But luckily, I want to end on a happy note, is that despite all of this, Corporate Accountability International and a number of allies on the ground were mobilizing hundreds of health professionals and parents and community groups. And through all this, we managed to make grassroots organizing prevail. And the ordinance did pass. It will be implemented on December 1st, which is very exciting. But of course, this isn't the end. So we are releasing a report in the next month or so with Dr. Nicholas Freudenberg at CUNY Hunter. And if you'd like to receive that report, Mary at the back of the room with a corporate accountability button, you can hand her your card and we'll make sure you receive it when it's released. But it's about local policy options beyond this particular one that communities can take on to address this. And the other thing is health professionals from all across the country have signed on to a letter to McDonald's CEO Jim Skinner calling on him to stop marketing to kids. And a number of you have it in your hands today. I encourage you to sign that, hand it to Mary at the back of the room, or go online. And I'll be around for questions at the end. Thanks so much.